When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hello, I'm Anviti Singh, and you're listening to Three Things, the Indian Express News Show. In this episode, we talk about a single solution to mitigate both Bihar's drought and flood situation. We also talk about the impact of supernumerary seats for women in IITs. But first, we take a look at the current Gujarat economy. Elections for Gujarat Assembly is just around the corner, and Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who also served as the Chief Minister of Gujarat for 12 years, has hailed the Gujarat model during the election campaign. The notion of a Gujarat model of development started gaining traction during Modi's tenure as the state's chief minister. In this segment, we speak to Indian Express's Udit Mishra on the different aspects of Gujarat's economy and how factors like unemployment, per capita income, inflation, etc. can play a crucial role in the elections. So, Udit, can you begin by briefly describing the current state of Gujarat economy?
So the central bit about Gujarat, and this has been true for a while, is that Gujarat has been one of the richer states in the country, and per capita incomes being higher. But it is also a state where we've seen that many of the non-economic factors, the hardcore non-economic factors like maybe health or many of these social metrics, Gujarat tends to falter on those metrics. So that is essentially the sum and substance of how we look at Gujarat.
Okay, and according to the RBI's Net State Domestic Product or SDP report, Gujarat is currently ranked fourth in India. So could you please first explain what an SDP is?
So the Net State Domestic Product, well, it sounds technical, but it is basically, you know, it gives you a certain sense about the size of the economy, of the state's economy. It basically refers to the monetary value of all the goods and services that were produced in the state. And as we know from when we talk about economies of countries, we talk about GDP. Similarly, when it comes to state, the comparable data often is net state domestic product. And so we've looked at the net state domestic product for the year 2020-21, which was the year when COVID pandemic hit us. So across the board, you'd find that the net state domestic product across the board was hit a bit, but it still gives you a certain ranking of the states. And we find that, broadly speaking, Maharashtra has always been the biggest economy within the country. And the data shows that Tamil Nadu is second now, and Karnataka is third, and Gujarat is fourth, followed by Uttar Pradesh and West Bengal.
And Udit, can you tell us whether the SDP affects the general population?
So it obviously does affect the general population, because, you know, any economy which produces more, creates more value, then essentially means that people in that economy would be earning more money. The government in that economy would be earning more revenues, and as a result, those revenues would then be flowed back either in making more productive investments or providing some relief to the people who are poorer or disadvantaged, or providing health services, many of the public services that one thinks of, say making a road or, you know, so all those things are easier if you're a richer economy. If you're a poorer economy, in terms of if you don't create as much value, then obviously you are hamstrung. So higher net state domestic product or a higher GDP is better as a result. That's the broad idea.
Well, Gujarat also ranks second in per capita income in the country. Does this reflect equally on all citizens of the state? Because these numbers are, after all, averages. So is there any data to show the ground reality?
There must be. I mean, if we dig down into the data, perhaps we can get to know what is exactly the breakup. But, you know, largely those breakups follow the same pattern. I mean, it will be the same for Maharashtra roughly, or Tamil Nadu, or Uttar Pradesh. Even in Uttar Pradesh, when it is 61,000 as against Gujarat, where it's over 2 lakhs, the distribution of that 61,000 would essentially mean that, you know, people must be living at less than 10,000 or 20,000. Whereas in Gujarat, the lower bottom half would be living at 40,000 or 50,000. So having a richer economy helps, because even the poorer are better off. It's the same with, say, India and US or India and UK, that even our richer class earns only as much as their middle class, or that thereabout. That is the kind of difference, because if you compare per capita incomes between India and UK, UK's per capita incomes are almost over 20 times ours. So, which basically means that even the relatively worse off in UK are better off than the average Indian. So that's the point being made in looking at per capita incomes. Obviously, the thing with per capita income is, as you said, it's an average. So it does still doesn't tell you the exact distribution of money. But higher per capita incomes would typically mean that even the lower categories of lower earning members of that economy would be slightly better off than the poorer economies. So while Gujarat is the fourth largest in terms of overall output as an economy within the country, we find that if you were to look at the per capita incomes, then Gujarat actually rises to the second slot. And this is significant, because that makes Gujarat as the second richest economy in the country, which basically means that on an average, a Gujarati would be better off than, say, somebody from Uttar Pradesh or somebody from possibly, you know, Tamil Nadu or Maharashtra. And we find that if you look at the data, obviously, Uttar Pradesh and Gujarat have very similar overall domestic product, almost matching to the last rupee. But when you do a per capita income, it immediately shows up, because that Uttar Pradesh per capita income falls to something like 61,000-62,000 rupees, and Gujarat's per capita income is over 2 lakh. And that is where it shows up, the difference in the income standards and living standards and purchasing power of the two economies. It is relevant that in 1994-95, just before BJP took over and sort of won every election since then, Gujarat was still the second richest in per capita incomes, even in 1994-95. So as an economy, Gujarat has been a richer economy even before the sort of the dominance of BJP started. And that's a crucial point to understand.
And can you tell us why this is crucial? Is this because of the upcoming elections?
So in terms of election, because, you know, obviously, if the notion is that Gujarat is today the second largest economy, second richest economy, then somebody can argue that, boss, this is not just because of BJP. While it is an achievement that you've maintained the second slot, but Gujarat was the second richest even before BJP's rise. You know, Maharashtra was number one at that time in 1994 as per capita income, right? It was number one. But now Maharashtra has slid. So Maharashtra could not retain its number one slot, but Gujarat retained its number two slot.
Okay, so per capita income is high. But Udit, what about employment or unemployment situation in general?
So, you know, unemployment rate per se is a flawed metric in India's case, typically, because unemployment rate is expressed in terms of the labor force participation, or how many people are demanding work. And in India, we've seen that across the board, people demanding work has been going down. And that has meant that unemployment rate often underestimates the kind of the stress that is there in the labor market, in the kind of joblessness that is there. But even so, if we stick to unemployment rate, we find that Gujarat has been the best amongst the top six economies, the six biggest economies in the country. And I've added Kerala for comparison, just because often, you know, the so-called Gujarat model and the so-called Kerala model are compared. And we find that Gujarat is head and shoulders better off than every other state in terms of unemployment rate, both for urban and rural areas. However, it is also interesting that the unemployment rate, both for urban and rural areas, have largely increased over the last 2-3 decades. And we find that even in Gujarat, they have literally doubled between from 1999-2000 levels to what they are today. So while Gujarat is better off than most other states, there is definitely an increase within Gujarat over the past 2 decades.
Right. So, Udit, we are witnessing so many stories coming from all over the world about rising inflation. So, can you tell us about its impact on Gujarat's economy?
So, you know, the globally inflation levels across the board, across countries have been on historic high levels. You know, most of the developed world, US, UK, Euro region, all have been facing historic highs on inflation. And that's largely because of the supply disruptions that happened during the COVID pandemic and then further exacerbated by the Russia's war in Ukraine. Domestically, what we find is that, and India has also been facing high inflation. The RBI is supposed to explain why India has been facing inflation, which is above and beyond what RBI's comfort zone is. In India, we find, and we look at the data since 2017-18, when the last election happened, and we find that almost across the board, Gujarat's inflation levels have been lower than not just the 5-6 biggest states that we take into consideration, but also the all India average. So if you were living in Gujarat, the inflation rate that you experienced was slightly lower than the rest of the country, or especially the comparable bigger economies in the country.
Okay, so the data points we talked about until now, they describe the strength of a state's economy. But what about the social metrics? Let's take healthcare, for example. Could you talk about how Gujarat fares there?
This has been a long time grouse that a lot of people have had with Gujarat's economy, that while it is one of the richest economies, much easier to get jobs and, you know, all the other factors are in favor, but Gujarat tends to underperform when it comes to such health metrics or social metrics. Even so, there is a particular metric that I found was the number of government hospital beds. Now, typically you would assume that, or you should expect that a richer state would perhaps be able to provide more government hospital beds to its population. But if we look at the 7 states that we've taken into consideration, Gujarat has the lowest number of government hospital beds. So even UP has, you know, 3 times it, that number, or Karnataka or Tamil Nadu all have much higher numbers. So it just shows that, you know, on these metrics, Gujarat has faltered. And when you look back over time, many of these metrics have actually worsened. For example, when we look at the data for children who were anemic, then according to the latest data, you know, 78, 79 or 80% of the children are anemic. And that is data for 2019, 2021, that time. And if you go back 15 odd years, 2005, 2006 data, that number was around 70. So, you know, as 15 years have progressed and Gujarat has grown further and become richer, the number of or the percentage of anemic children has actually gone up. So those kind of problems still afflict the Gujarat economy. And that is something of a concern.
And next, we talk about a water crisis management project in Bihar. On Sunday, during the inauguration of the Har Ghar Ganga Jal project, Bihar Chief Minister Nitish Kumar said, and I quote, "Now, you don't need to go to Ganga for water. Ganga will be coming to your taps," unquote. The project, which was delayed because of COVID, is aimed at providing Ganga water on tap in arid and dry areas of the state that do not lie along the course of the river. The project will also alleviate flood zones in the state. To know more about the project, we speak to Indian Express's Senior Assistant Editor, Santosh Singh. So Santosh, you attended the inauguration of Har Ghar Ganga Jal project. Can you tell us what is the idea behind this project?
Yeah, idea was very clear, because, you know, we have some districts like Gaya, Nalanda, Nawada, which are very water table goes down, recedes fast, especially during summers. And these places, especially the town areas, are dependent mostly on water tankers, which are sent from neighboring districts. So during summers, it is very tough time. So what they thought about was to harvest flood waters from Ganga and take it through pipe to these places. It's like piped water supply. So idea is to provide drinking water to the parched area. Second idea is about the flood management. Can the government divert Ganga water during floods? Ganga has so much silt, they could not have taken water from Ganga in normal time. So they thought, let us choose the flood time, especially 4 months during monsoons.
Right, so they have finally completed the first phase of this project. Could you talk about how this whole system came together?
It started towards the end of 2019, then COVID came, there had been some disruptions, yet they completed the project with good speed despite so many hurdles. They had to cross through some railway lines, gas pipelines, 151 kilometer pipeline. They have used pipes of different diameters and they have taken it to big reservoir. From a big reservoir in Nawada, it is taken to another two big reservoirs, one in Gaya, one in Rajgir. And from there, they are taken to water treatment plants. And from water treatment plants, they reach the household. From the existing system, they have also renovated the old taps. Now, I think from today, it has started working in Rajgir. From tomorrow, it will start functioning in Gaya and Bodh Gaya.
Okay, so Santosh, before this project was launched, how are people getting water in these dry areas?
Yes, that's a very pertinent and important question. Earlier, all these places, Rajgir, Bodh Gaya, and Gaya, they had been getting water from water tankers. Water tankers in urban areas, and of course, they are also using groundwater. But with groundwater receding fast, water table depleting fast, the quality and quantity of groundwater had suffered a lot, and it is not drinkable. So they had been largely dependent on water tankers. Since all these places get good number of tourists, government had all the more reasons to think something out of the box.
And these water tankers, are these private water tankers or was the government supplying free water through these tankers?
Both. Government had been supplying the water, but that was never enough. They had been dependent on so many private water plants. They had been supplying waters to urban areas and also village areas. Rural areas are still dependent on private water supply. So there had been a scarcity of water and they had to buy water. But with this project, I don't think they would need to buy it from private tankers.
And Santosh, what is the current estimate of water supply to the households in this region?
They have announced 135 liter per person, I think, which is huge. If even your five member family, you have more getting more than 600 liter per day, which is not only good enough for drinking water, it is good enough for domestic supply, domestic purpose as well. It would not be certainly used for agriculture purpose, it will be fully for domestic purpose. Idea is to discourage people from using groundwater so that water table in those areas do not recede further. That is the whole idea. So from today onward, these places, I think exactly about 7.5 lakh households in all three towns of religious importance, historical importance, and the most famous tourist destinations of the state, they will be getting watered.
Well, that sounds like only prominent cities will benefit from the project as of now, and not smaller cities or villages, right?
Not in the first phase. First phase, only the urban population would get it. Maybe in the second or third phase, because they are planning 13 reservoirs in this area in coming years. So one, the storage capacity would be bigger. Of course, water would be supplied to rural area. But as of now, second phase of project would go to Nawada, which is also an arid district where water table recedes fast in, especially during summers. So these four places, and today Water Resources Minister Sanjay Jha said that this experiment could be replicated further, and Bihar has set an example for other states as well about flood management.
And what about the rest of Bihar? Do they get groundwater or is this project needed in other parts of Bihar as well?
I think it is needed in other parts of Bihar for two reasons, because Ganga flows through arsenic belt, there is issues of fluoride, and of course, less water, that is the problem overall. Not all districts of Bihar. Bihar has 38 districts. But if you count, at least 15 districts would fall in category of water scarce districts. So that's why the Water Resources Minister said this experiment could be replicated further through the water management, and they can tame flood waters and they can think of the project. They are just waiting for the how this project goes. Initially, it looks a successful project. Yes, much of Bihar is dependent on groundwater. Bihar already has a scheme called Har Ghar Nal Ka Jal. And they take groundwater, and they are a PhD, Public Health Engineering Department, and then Panchayati Raj, and also Urban Development. Three different ministries are supplying water. When we talk about PHED, it filters water through Panchayati Raj Department. Water doesn't need to be filtered. There are 2-3 categories. So most of the places are getting water. Nitish Kumar claims that 95% of Bihar population are getting water. But I am afraid about the whether the water quality is good or not, or even the supply. We are getting complaints of supply being erratic. But if we have a project like this being replicated in, say, for 10 more districts, I think it would be good.
And so what about the quality of the water being supplied through this new project? Will there be a treatment plant?
Yeah, there has been 3 water treatment plants, each for a place. They are claiming that water quality would be good. As of now, once water supply comes through channel, and if there is further study about the water quality, then we'd get to know whether the quality is good enough for drinking.
And in the end, we look at data from the IITs. Under a scheme of supernumerary seats, the number of female students at IITs has increased steadily. The scheme was introduced 5 years ago. And this year, as many as 3,310 girls, or 20% of the total number of seats, have confirmed admissions across 23 IITs. In this segment, the Indian Express's Pallavi Smart speaks to us about the scheme and its impact. So Pallavi, can you first tell us about the scheme of supernumerary seats for women at the IITs?
So the female supernumerary seats in admissions to IITs that was introduced in the year 2018. It was following the recommendations by a committee headed by the then IIT Mandi director Timothy Gonsalves. So it's popularly known as the required push, and it is aimed at repairing the skewed gender ratio on IIT campuses predominantly occupied by boys. Instead of reserving seats in the already existing pool, additional seats are created for girls under the female supernumerary seats.
Okay, and what has been the impact of this scheme? Have we seen an increase in the number of girls in the last 5 years?
A comparative look at the joint entrance examination data from the past 5 years shows a steady increase in the number of girls in IITs. So from having 1,780 girls in the new admissions in the year 2018-19. Now the IITs have admitted total of 3,310 girls this academic year, the admission that process that concluded. So this is a significant increase, and thanks to the gradual increase in the number of female supernumerary seats, the number of girls confirming admissions in IITs is also on the rise. So it began with around 14% girls in the academic year 2018-19 when it was introduced, and now it has reached up to 20%. Last year, we managed to get complete 20% the IITs. This is the second year in a row when the girls are 20% of the total new admissions.
And could you talk about this year's data compared to the previous years?
Sure. So in 2017, a year before the introduction of female supernumerary seats, only 995 girl candidates, that was around 9% of the total seats, had confirmed admission in IITs. And this was lesser in the year before that, that is 2016. Only 847 girls, or only 8% of the total seats, had confirmed admissions that year.
So Pallavi, you also spoke to the former director of IIT Delhi, and he explained why this increase in the number of girls joining IITs is significant. Could you share what he said?
Yeah, so I've spoken to Professor V. Ramagopal Rao, former director of IIT Delhi. He referred to these same figures, you know, showing that how the number of seats allotted to girls had never crossed the mark of 10% of total seat allotment before the introduction of female supernumerary seats. Like how he mentioned, the female supernumerary seats were aimed at correcting this, and it has managed to do so for the 5th year in a row with gradual increase. The idea is to eventually do away with the female supernumerary seats and yet continue to have those many girls confirming admissions to IITs. But yes, this is a slow and steady process. But most of them from the IITs are saying that, you know, it is going to the right direction.
But well, girls have been accepted to IITs even before the scheme. But previously, very few were actually confirmed admission. Can you tell us what this means?
Yes, that meant that those girls were qualifying. So girls qualified for IIT seats even before the female supernumerary seats were introduced. Okay. But then there have been different factors playing role when it comes to finally girls confirming admissions. So starting from the branch of engineering to even the location of the IIT, these are important factors in decision making for girls and their parents as opposed to boys. So instead of joining, say, mechanical or civil engineering branch in an IIT, which is far away from home, girls and their parents would prefer to confirm admission to a nearby non-IIT engineering college for more preferred branch of engineering such as information technology or computer science. In fact, even the data from the previous years show a similar observation. Around 7,259 girls qualified for admissions in 2017, but only 995 had finally confirmed the admissions.
So Pallavi, most IITs across the country are reaching their goal of female admissions due to the scheme. But IIT Jammu has managed to meet its goal without it. Could you talk to us about that?
So IIT Jammu has consistently admitted almost 20% female students each year from the year 2018, since the time when the supernumerary seats was introduced. Basically, the IIT Jammu, they have a smaller pool of total number of seats. They have 240 seats in total. With that smaller pool of total seats, this rather new IIT has managed to have 20% strength of girls in new admissions within the existing number of seats. So with a smaller number of total seats, it was possible for this IIT to manage the 20% strength of girls without the female supernumerary seats.
You were listening to The Three Things by the Indian Express. Today's show was hosted by me, Anviti Singh, and written and produced by me, Anviti Singh, with the help of Utsha Sarmin and Rahil Philippos. It was edited and mixed by Suresh Pawar. If you like the show, then do subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also recommend the show to someone who you think will like it. Share it with a friend or someone in your family. It's the best way for people to get to know about us. You can also tweet us at Express Podcast or write to us at podcast@indianexpress.com.